Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? From one coast to the other, the right to the left. Sean Wally coming at you from Virginia. Sean Boyd all the way over in the Sacramento area. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, man. Well, just, an exciting weekend to kick things off for the NFL and the wild card. But first and foremost, Sean Wally, got to pay some homage and respect to where respect is due. One of our colleagues, broadcast colleagues, media colleagues, had passed away yesterday, and ESPN's own Stuart Scott. And, I can tell you, sent shockwaves throughout the sports realm, all spectrums. And it was a sad, sad day. And so, I want to pay my respects to Stuart Scott and some of the things that he has done, not just for everybody. I mean, I had a chance to meet with Stuart personally a couple of times, once in Oakland and the other in San Francisco before they moved to Santa Clara. And I can tell you, Sean, he was just one of those guys that was down to earth. You could just talk to him about anything. One of the things that I do remember is his love for his Carolina Tar Heels, being a North Carolina grad. And, he talked about that a lot and glowed about that and, just sent words of encouragement to me as far as becoming a broadcaster and, just continuing to, go after my dream. And so with that, I pay the utmost respect to Stuart Scott. You will be missed, and man, yeah, it is a sad, sad day to lose Stuart Scott.
It was very, very sad to hear that Stuart had passed and cancer finally got the best of him, but he battled and fought, and as he put it, he won the battle. He won the fight with his emotion, with his passion for life and his family and his work at ESPN. And just like you were talking about, I had the pleasure to have some one-on-one time with him in Seattle, December 2013, before the Saints-Seahawks Monday night game. And as you were alluding to, Sean, he was gracious, he was humble, he was eager to give advice and answer any questions I had. And it's times like that in this industry that we get to meet those types of people that you never forget.
Yeah. It's the types of people like Stuart that, regardless of the adversity that was put in his way, he still lived his life. He still lived it to the fullest. And he set a great, great example for, humankind as far as just saying, I'm going to take my mind off of myself. I'm just going to, to continue to press on. And man, Stuart, we love you. And, we just know that you're looking down on us. And there are going to be some great things to come out of this from all walks of media. And so, or just all walks of sports, because again, he was a great impact on the sports world.
Yeah, and he paved the way for a lot of inner city youth, and for not only that, but people to be on TV and be on a microphone and be outside of the norm and outside of the box.
Yeah, well, he was a pioneer, and his style, to be honest with you, was one that wasn't looked upon as being, gracious, if you will. I mean, what I mean by that is it wasn't accepted well. I mean, here is this, you know, person that comes with a lot of excitement that brought a little bit of that street cred into sports and, you know, did it a little bit different. And that wasn't accepted in the beginning, but yet he blazed a trail. And, you know, as a result, it brought a lot of people closer to the world of sports. It brought more people, you know, as far as an interest in taking a look at what's going on. And dare I say, got a lot of people to think of the opportunity that, hey, maybe this is something, broadcast media, that I can do because of some of the things that they saw Stewart doing. So, you know, I mean, man, what a great person to actually set that example. And again, you know, he will be missed.
It just goes to make you think and take a look at life. And here's a guy doing everything right, in great physical shape, only 49 years old, has two daughters that he loves dearly, and one of the top guys in his profession, yet this still happens. It just, you have to shake your head. You have to, unfortunately, it takes something like that sometimes to remind people tomorrow isn't necessarily a given.
And yeah, and with that, you know, we just have to, you know, continue to live life to the fullest. We have to, you know, take whatever adversities that come our way, and we, you know, we tackle it head on. And I'm sure that, you know, Stewart would want us to just to continue to have that fire, have that fervor, that passion, and moving forward and bringing the best analysis, the best broadcast that we can possibly give, Sean Wally. And that's what we're going to do.
Now, Sean, how did you find out? Did you see any of the NFL pregame shows and see them announce it live? I know personally I got to see his former coworker and good friend Rich Eisen announce it live on the NFL Network. And how Rich held it together, I don't know. I mean, kudos to Rich, and that shows his professionalism. But, man, when, you know, you have to let the world know that your friend and former colleague and somebody that helped you along at ESPN, as Rich Eisen said, he was 26 years old when he first made it to SportsCenter. Man, you know, it's just incredible that they were still able to go on with shows yesterday for the NFL games.
Yeah, you know, when I first found out, to be honest with you, one of the first things that I do when I wake up is I go right to social media. And when I went on, you know, that was one of the first stories that I saw. And initially I thought, man, this can't be true. But just scrolling down, you know, and starting to read the articles, it became more real. And, you know, I've lost a personal friend to cancer recently. And so, as a matter of fact, there's a funeral coming. The funeral's coming up for him next week. And so it hit home. It hit home a lot, you know, and, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, you just ask yourself, you know, how can you prevent it? And I don't know if there's really anything that you could possibly do to prevent, you know, an illness like that in cancer. And so, you know, I know that, you know, we can eat healthy. We can do all the, you know, the best things to make sure that our body can fight certain things, but, you know, it was just one of those reminders that, hey, you know, we can do a little bit more, you know, and also, you know, just reaching out and, you know, you look at your wife, you look at your kids, and you just say, you know what, you just squeeze them a little bit tighter, and you just, you know, take a deep breath and like I said before, just move forward.
Well, let's get on to happier things and go out to the Chandler Reach hotline and welcome in Ed Haskins, head boys basketball coach at Garfield High School in Seattle. Coach, thanks for your time.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Coach. Man, you've come back from an exciting weekend. I know that you were down in Las Vegas. What I mean by that, your Garfield Bulldogs down in Las Vegas, I believe, came out victorious as champions. Kind of give us an idea on how that weekend went.
Oh, boy. It was actually a week of basketball. And I tell you what, there were some great teams down there. And hats off to that, to Coach Jason and the rest of those guys down there in Las Vegas High School that run the Las Vegas Championship. They do a great, outstanding job of running that tournament. And we've been fortunate to go in there the last couple of years and have had some success. But, I guess the only thing I can really say is I'm just proud of my boys. I have a really young team, and, I have one senior and the rest are sophomores and juniors. I think my best player is probably a sophomore. And just really excited about how they have not only bought in, but the way that they play basketball is an unselfish brand. It's really kind of a throwback. You know, it's I can't liken them to any, San Antonio Spurs or anybody like that, but they're sure fun to watch. You know, even while I'm coaching, they're very fun to watch. So just was exciting. Played against, like I said, some great athletes, some great teams, Valley, out of Las Vegas High School out of there, obviously, and down there also was Cathedral out of California, Crenshaw High School. They were all in those in the tournament, in those perennial powerhouses. So we were just excited to come out and fortunate to come out, with the number one spot.
Now, Coach, you guys were the state champions last year. Am I correct?
Absolutely, 4A.
4A state champion, so congratulations on that. So give me an idea on what you were thinking coming into this season, because right now at 10-0, you guys are off to an incredible start and, of course, ranked number one in the state again. Kind of give us an idea on what you saw coming in, because you mentioned you only have one senior and then the rest are sophomores and juniors. So, what was that preparation like?
Boy, I tell you what, last year I had, I want to say, 8 seniors on that team. Very special team, of course, winning state championship, the first one, at Garfield in 16 years. And, I really felt like this year was going to be a rebuild. We're going to go through our bumps and our bruises and this is only, we're only halfway through, so let's really kind of take this with a can of, kind of a can of paint. But, for these guys to have this measure of success this early is it's like giving a shot of steroids to their confidence, we've got the meat of our schedule coming up, playing teams like Rainier Beach and Eastside Catholic, but those guys last year were a very special group, a senior heavy group. They just were they were determined to win the state championship at Garfield. And that was special about that group. This year, these guys, Garfield guys who just feel like they have something to prove, and they don't feel like they really get the respect, that some of the other teams do around. And they're just playing that way. They're playing with a chip on the shoulder, and they know that the sum is definitely bigger than the parts, and those guys are playing like that, and we've tried to preach it a little bit, but we haven't had to. They just love playing together. So it's been fun. It's been really fun. And like I said, I think my only expectations coming in this year was that I knew that I had a good group of kids. Like they, my GPA on the team is about a 3.0, and they're good kids. They're really good kids and good guys. So I knew I was going to have a lot of fun with this group. So that's really all I expected. And it's kind of the shift, of win state championship to we're going to be the best us we can be. And, let's see what happens. And that's kind of where we're at.
Now, Coach, spending a week in Las Vegas, you've got Christmas, you've got New Year's, a busy time there. How do you keep students focused on the goal of playing their best basketball?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the way we just stay focused is, we get them away. Obviously, we're all in the hotel together, and we go down for one goal. It's no different than really what we do for a state championship tournament or any other tournament. But they knew they were there, you know, for business. It wasn't, we call them business trips. They're not, you know, go down there and have fun and, you know, whatever. And there's going to be times for fun. Sunday, we didn't play any games. So we had, you know, team day where they went out and went to Caesar's Palace and got to shop and, you know, go to the strip and stuff like that. And that's all part of it, you know, so you definitely don't want to, you know, extract the fun from a trip like that, you know, especially going to a place like Las Vegas. But I think the balance of that is just to focus on what we need to do while we're there and why, the reason, the purpose, you know, while we're there. And so we're a pretty purpose-driven team. And I think that's, you know, so in the past with other teams, I might have given you different answers. But with this team, honestly, they're pretty purpose-driven. They're pretty purpose-driven.
Now, coming into this season, you moved from 4A to 3A and recently called 3A the toughest classification in the state. Why do you feel that way?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, just basketball-wise, because you have teams that are, you know, you have nationally ranked teams like Rainier Beach. You have, you know, perennial powerhouses like Eastside Catholic. You have the Franklins. You have the O'Days. You have, you know, Roosevelt came down with us. You know, they've got a great player in Cam Haslam. You know, I mean, it's there's just so many, you know, and Seattle Prep. You know, all these teams are, you know, all the teams that I named are ranked in the top 10 in the state of Washington, you know, this classification, and they're all in my league, you know, so bar none, you know, and I can say this, I've coached in Metro as an assistant coach for 10 years, excuse me, from 1997-98 to 2008 before I took the Garfield job, and then coached over in the Kinko League, which is more the suburban league, you know, in the state, and bar none, and I've been exposed to a lot of the other ones, bar none, this Metro League is top to bottom the toughest league in the state, for sure, for sure. And 3A is the toughest classification, and now I'm just talking about the Metro League, particularly. But going to the state, you know, I mean, you have just there's so many teams, you know, from not just this side of the mountains, but the east side of the mountains, Shadow Park, you know, other schools that, you know, are 3A that are just, you know, like I said, have multiple state championships hanging from their rafters. And It's just a lot with 3A this year, and which makes it fun. You know, I mean, if you're a competitor, and, you know, I'm the youngest of nine kids, and I've always had to compete. So, you know, it's just what it is. You just compete and do what you do.
Ed Haskins, head basketball coach for Garfield High School in Seattle. Now, Ed, what is one of the inspirations, or who is one of the inspirations that drives you to do what you do?
The inspiration in my life is my brother, who passed away in 2009, Aaron Haskins Sr., Pastor Aaron Haskins Sr. He was definitely my mentor growing from young man to where I am now. I looked up to him more than probably anybody else on the planet. I watched him on TV play basketball. You know, I watched him play in the NC2A tournament against guys like Ralph Sampson, you know, and be successful. You know, he got drafted, you know, into the NBA. He is the reason why, not only on the basketball side, he definitely helped develop my love for basketball, but on the basketball and coaching basketball in particular, is literally you have to love people. And he showed me the benefit of giving to people. And that's what my life has been about. I'm 17 years in now of doing this coaching thing. And he's been by far, and I've missed him dearly. And Sean, obviously, you've known him, you know, growing up as well. But he's definitely been the inspiration in my life, and there's others that, come that have helped me along the way, you know, in terms of, you know, just growing as a coach and growing, you know, my love for basketball, but by far, Aaron has been the guy who has been my inspiration.
You know, Aaron is such an inspiration to us all of us who grew up. And of course, as you were saying, you know, Ed, you and I, we're family. And so we,
absolutely,
you know, we grew from the same stock, and getting a chance to watch Aaron, I'll never forget the first time that I got a chance to see Aaron play on that big scope against Ralph Sampson, where that put Washington State on the map, by the way, when they played Virginia. And I'll never forget how proud I was, you know, because I knew Aaron as a person, you know, before he hit the big stage. That's what made it special. That's what made it heartfelt. And so, you know, as your inspiration as well, he was one of my inspirations as far as, you know, just being that beacon, being that person that goes out and, you know, stands in the gap. And, you know, I coached quite a few years as well. And so, you know, I can definitely attest that to the tutelage that Aaron had taught us both. And so, much appreciative.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, he actually, the last game that he saw me coach was my first year at Garfield, and we made it all the way to the state championship game, my very first year, and we lost to Federal Way by 8 points. And this was amazing to me because, you know, Garfield is like a Kansas or a Kentucky or a North Carolina, and when you win, everybody is there, and everybody, you know, and Garfield's a good place, so please don't hear. Garfield's a great place, actually. I was just telling somebody the other day, I love it, and I wouldn't want to coach any other school in the state. But when you lose, and this is anywhere, you know, when you lose, it's pretty lonely, you know, especially when you're the head guy. Right. And, you know, at the end of that game, you know, I was probably in the locker room for maybe 30, 45 minutes, and all the kids are gone, parents are gone. You know, other team has gone with their trophy and everything. And I looked up, and there's a big, long hallway in the back of the Tacoma Dome where the locker rooms are. And as I was walking out, I had my head down, and, you know, I was just walking towards my car. And next thing I know, I hear the voice, you know, I hear Aaron's voice, and he's like, "Man, what do you got your head down for?" And he says, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?" And the only way that he could say it, he says, "Are you kidding me? First time head coach, first year coach at the biggest school in Seattle. You lead them all the way to not only a league championship, but to the state championship game." You know, and he leave it to Aaron. And this is why I love him and miss him so dearly, that he's the only one that literally that night could have made me feel like I was a winner when I had just lost the state championship game. And that's the reason that he was and has been and still is such an inspiration to me.
Man, that's great stuff. And, you know, again, you know, Aaron has, you know, he still lives within us all. And so,
absolutely.
You know, and I still have that fire, you know, just because of the smile that I would see on his face and, you know, just some of the things, you know, just because he loved me as a brother as well.
Right.
So,
right.
So yeah, I, you know, it is special to have, you know, been around Aaron and done some great things with him.
Yeah, no question.
Now I've got a couple other names for you, as far as influences are concerned, and you know, again, we come from the same stock. So when I mention the name Mel Ninnis, what comes to mind when I mention his name?
Fire. That's what comes to mind when you mention, honestly, he was my JV coach when I was at Clover Park. And, you know, Coach Ninnis, he, same guy, you know, he actually, you know, I don't know if you remember, but he actually went to school with my other brother, Arthur, and at Central, they played together.
Right.
And so I've known Coach obviously for some years, 30 plus years. And he literally right now, he just literally was at our jamboree, over Thanksgiving weekend. He comes up every year, brings Clover Park up every year to Seattle just to support me. And, you know, he is the same guy that he was back in the 80s and 90s when I was at Clover Park. Literally, his passion, his fire, his desire has not diminished one bit. Like literally, you know.
I mean, you can probably still hear some of the phrases that he would use. You know, as far as, you know, his banter with officiating, or maybe how he coached us in practice. I mean, it was just comical. It was comical, but Sean, it had meaning to it.
Yeah, no, you always knew, and this is what I felt about him. I always knew that coach had my back. And so, you know, he always taught us to be respectful. You know what I mean? We never said anything to the officials because they were grown men and they had the authority. But now he would go back and forth, and you know he would do it in his own way. You know what I mean? And you know, I just loved it. And you know, honestly, with him, I would say definitely. Which, you know, I would honestly put Coach Nennis up there as one of the best coaches that I've had. To be honest with you, and just his care, he showed me care for kids. You know what I mean? And not, you know, a bunch of X's and O's, and because that's not really what coaching's all about, but just the care that he had. You know, he would ask me, and he still does, ask me, how's my mom doing? How's my dad doing? You know, how are different people in my family doing? He taught me that, you know, and that really stuck with me all these years. So, you know, Coach Nennis has definitely been an inspiration, and I'm excited for him. I think it was 2010, if I'm not mistaken, that he actually won his first state championship.
Yeah.
You know, so very, very happy for him. Yeah, very happy for him. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, Coach Nennis, fire is definitely an adjective that I would use, you know, for his – I mean, I love Coach Nennis. Love him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, he is a warrior.
Now, one more person of influence for you. When I mentioned the name Mike Bethea.
Oh, my goodness. You know – big brother. Mike Bethea has, and let me say this, next to my brother Aaron, in terms of definitely what I'm doing now, I mean, Mike Bethea gave me my shot. So anybody who's going to give you, my first coaching job was at South Shore Middle School, and he brought me up to Rainier Beach High School, you know, back in 98. And, anybody who's going to give you a shot and believe in you, you can never repay that. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's so funny because now we're, quote unquote, at the two perennial powerhouses in the city. But we talk more now probably than we did when I was his assistant for 9 years. You know what I'm saying? Literally. And, you know, I would say what people don't know about Coach Mike is the size of his heart. You know what I mean? Like how much he really, and this is, you know, I've been really blessed to be around some men like this, but how much he really loves the kids that he coaches and the game, you know, and how much he loves the game. I mean, you know, that's another guy who's honestly, Coach Mike has been doing it for 20 plus years now. And his passion and desire for the game has not diminished at all. I mean, he's, you know, honestly, it depends on how people rate and all that kind of stuff. But by most people's standards, and, you know, you ask people who's the greatest of all time in the NBA, they would say Phil Jackson. You know, you ask them in college, they would say John Wooden. And why would you say that? It's because of the number of championships that they have. Coach Mike Bethea has more state championships than any other coach in the history of Washington State basketball. And I was fortunate enough to sit next to him for 9 years. Unbelievable, unbelievable tutoring and tutelage that I was able to be under, you know, and the best advice that he ever gave me while I was there, and this is way before I got the Garfield job, but he told me, he said, Ed, you're going to be, because you're a leader, he said, you're going to be a head coach in this city one day. And he said, never pick coaches, your assistants, based on X's and O's. That always pick coaches based on who is loyal to you. Mm. And that stuck with me, and that has stuck with me the whole time. And I have friends that are good coaches that have been with me now for the last 7 years. So it's definitely it's definitely showed itself true, because you go through so many things as a coach, things that you could never be prepared for as a head coach until you sit in that seat, that you need somebody there that has your back. And I'm thankful because I have, like I said, I have a great administration. I have, you know, great staff. And I also have people like Coach Mike and Coach Dennis that I can call and be like, hey, guys that have state championships, how many guys can say that? You know, that have state championships, that Coach Mike is perennial top 25 program in the country. You know, how many guys can say that I can call a guy like that? You know, he's going to give me not only just some advice, but he's going to give me his best advice. And I know that. And we'll compete for the 32 minutes that we're going to play on January 19th. But after that, he'll still be my big brother and I'll still be his little brother. And that's just the way it is. So, and we've done it before. We've already played against each other. So, yeah, but Mike Pathé is extremely special. I wouldn't be where I'm at right now without Mike Pathé.
Coach, what are your top keys that you hope to get across to your student athletes, whether it be on the basketball floor and or in life?
Yeah. You know, I think what Aaron told me when I was going through some things in my life, my brother told me, he said, Ed, you know, preparation plus opportunity equals success. And, you know, and I tell my guys, and I kind of put my own little spin on it, that opportunities don't go away, they just go to somebody else. And understand that you have to be able to put yourself in a position to take advantage of whatever comes your way. It's for me, it's a privilege. You know, I grew up going to Garfield games, you know, and wishing that I could play there, you know, but there was only the elite, you know, of the state, not just the city, but the state, that could be where that purple and white. And now I look back on it, and my preparation all those years as an assistant coach from middle school to high school to now has got me to where I am. And so the opportunity came, and I was ready for it, and I seized it. And that's what I try to teach my guys. Because if you're able to take advantage of some opportunities, whether it be on the court, off the court, business, personal, social, whatever, you know, you'll be able to continue to move forward. And that's what life's about. It's really about forward motion. And my dad used to tell me all the time, anything that's not growing is dead, you know. And so you want to continue to be a lifelong learner and grow. And that's just some of the things that we try to teach our guys.
Coach Ed Haskins, boys basketball program at Garfield High School in Seattle, thank you so much for your time and insight tonight.
Oh, man, thank you guys for having me. Sean, man, I love you.
Hey, love you too, brother.
and we'll talk to you soon. It was great meeting you, the rest of you guys. And go Bulldogs.
I like it. Go Bulldogs. And thanks again, brother, and we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
There goes Ed Haskins, head basketball coach of the Garfield High School Bulldogs. If you want to see what's going on with the number one team in the state of Washington, one of the top teams in the nation, January 9th, Lakeside at Garfield, and that is 8 p.m. tip-off. That is the next time that the Garfield Bulldogs will take the court. Man, Sean Wally's so excited to get a chance to talk with, you know, one of my brothers growing up, man, and as I mentioned, coming from the same stock. I mean, you can kind of hear the passion and the energy that comes from Ed and the drive that keeps him moving.
Well, he's in a position where he has to have that. Being at Garfield, as we've stated, one of the top programs in the state, most respected in the country as well, with rich tradition and history. Without that drive, without that passion, it's tough to succeed.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, I look forward to some great things happening for Ed Haskins. Of course, he's got a state championship under his belt. Sounds like they're on their way to another one. It's some exciting talk. Coming back from the break, we are going to have guest number two on the double with the Double S Express. That's none other than Ian Furness from 950 KJR. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Some legends are told, some turn to dust or to gold, but you will remember me.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, and let's go right back out to the Chandler Reach Winery Hotline and welcome in big time guest number two, and that is Ian Furness from Sports Radio 950 KJR in Seattle. Ian, thanks for your time tonight.
Guys, no problem. How are you?
Great, Ian. Thanks for being on the show, man. And, boy, it looks like this Saturday, the Carolina Panthers will invade CenturyLink Field. I know at one point yesterday it looked like it was going to be a little bit different with Detroit possibly coming in. But you think the Seahawks will be ready for this this daunting task?
Well, they'll certainly see a familiar opponent on the other side. They've seen this Carolina team each of the last 3 years. But, fellas, the differences are going to be in Seattle this time. The last three games have all been in Charlotte, so in Bank of America Stadium. So the fact that it's going to be in Seattle adds a little different twist to it. Obviously, the pressure of the playoffs, and can Cam Newton handle that on the road? That'll come into question as well. So, I mean, really, and the thing is with these two teams, when they've played, they've always been close games, so I would expect more of the same.
Yeah, and that's one of the questions that I wanted to ask you. Of course, the last two times that the Carolina Panthers have played the Seahawks, they have been low-scoring defensive affairs. And I can't really say too – well, yeah, it is defense, but at the same time, there's a lot of mistakes. But this time being at CenturyLink, this should be an advantage for Seattle to actually, you know, do a little bit of damage.
Well, I would think so. I mean, Seattle's just they're so good at home. You know, they're great. You know, at home in the playoffs, they're 9-2 all time. I mean, obviously those are different teams, but you know, you come through CenturyLink Field, and that's just a whole different world. You know, I mean, they've had the one meeting before in the playoffs with the two teams. You know, that was back, of course, in the 2005 season, and that if you remember that, of course, was the 06 NFC Championship game. Back in January 22nd of 06, and Seattle won that one 36-14. So, I mean, the history tells you and everything tells you Seattle should win this football game. They're a heavy favorite. I would expect it to be close for about three quarters, and then hopefully, from our standpoint out here in Seattle, they pull away in the end.
Now, Ian, Cam Newton has never played a game in Seattle. What kind of awakening is he in for?
Well, like everyone else, you know, you'll try to prepare for it. I know we talked to some folks back there today, and you know, they're doing the same old tricks as always. They've got the airplane sound effects and all that at practice. You can't replicate it. You guys, I know you guys have both been in that stadium. You guys have been on the field. You know what it's like. It's crazy. I mean, you can't hear yourself think. You can't use verbal signals. You're going to have to use hand signals, and it's just a different beast. Now, look, he played in the SEC. He played in some big-time environments. This is just a different world. It's constant. They know when they're getting on you. They know when you're flustered as an opposing team and an opposing quarterback. And you know, the fans here, they're savvy, they're smart. I think it's going to be an awakening for them. Tony Romo's a terrific quarterback. It took him a few times to solve it. Aaron Rodgers still hasn't solved it. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, you're going to be seeing a guy that's going to really be challenged, I think, because of that crowd.
From a talk show host standpoint and storyline standpoint, was there a little bit of disappointment that Golden Tate isn't returning to Seattle with the Lions?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's that. There's, you know, if you look at it just from a media standpoint, I think even from some fans were looking at the same thing going, God, if Golden comes in, it's, you know, he's a polarizing figure. He's outspoken and, you know, he'll go back and forth with fans on social media. And that would have added a lot of, you know, juice to this thing already that has enough. But I think if you're just looking from a, you know, if you take a step back and say, what's the path of least resistance, it's definitely Carolina. And so storylines are great. You have storylines. It's the postseason. It's the playoffs. I mean, there's enough storylines to go around. You don't need any more storylines if you just want to get back to the Super Bowl. And this is this should be a better matchup for Seattle. It's interesting because Carolina thought the same thing. Carolina went to Green Bay this year, got boat raced. They wanted no part of going back up to Lambeau. They said, hey, we came close against Seattle before, so let's take our chances. I mean, it was a 13-9 game this year in Carolina. It was a 12-7 game last year, and it was a 16-12 game the year before. So, you know, the largest margin of victory, obviously, is 6 points, and that was this season on a late touchdown. So I think it's hard. So, I mean, actually not even 6 points. Right? 5 points is the biggest one. That was last year. It's a four-point game this year. So you look at the matchups. Carolina wanted Seattle. I think deep down Seattle wanted Carolina to get each other, which should be fun.
Now, Ian, I want to go back to yesterday's game, the Detroit Lions-Dallas Cowboys football game. And, of course, there was a huge controversial call, or shall I say no call, pass interference that
there was a call.
Yeah.
There was a call. It was announced. It just wasn't enforced, so I don't know how you call it.
What do you make of that? I've never seen anything like that to where, you know, the flag was thrown, then there's a huddle, and then they pick up the flag. Now, don't get me wrong. I've seen the flag picked up before, but when the flag is picked up and there's no explanation, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, I've never seen it where the penalty is announced, and then 17 seconds later, they just pick it up and move on. That was odd, and that's what happened. They announced the penalty, 17 seconds elapsed, and then they didn't enforce it, and they just went about their merry way. Nobody has seen that. I mean, I'm blessed. I'm lucky. I'm at every game the last few years, and you know, so I see 16 games a year in person. I've never seen that ever. So I think if Dallas goes on and wins a Super Bowl or even gets to the Super Bowl, I think that's going to have to be and will continue to be a big storyline, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you know, Sean and I have talked over the past few weeks. Actually, last week he asked me who was going to win the Super Bowl. And Ian, I know that you'll probably think different as well, but I picked the Dallas Cowboys. And the reason why I picked them was because they have this lucky rabbit's foot, I feel. There's a team that comes in where it just seems like no matter what happens, things just go their way. And you know, Dallas has had that string going on this year, and yesterday came up and the call happens, or the no call happens. You've got Dez Bryant that steps out on the field with no helmet, no justification whatsoever. I mean, it just seems like fate right now that these guys are going to move their way through the rounds.
It does feel that way in a sense. You know, and they had Seattle do them a favor, knock off Philadelphia, and you know, and win a division, all those things. I would agree to a point, although I think at some point Tony Romo is still going to end up being Tony Romo, and I think it's going to happen this weekend. I don't think they go to Green Bay and win that football game. I don't see Aaron Rodgers, who has been nearly perfect at Lambeau Field this year, being anything less in that game. And, you know, you go up there, I know it's the first time they've been there in a playoff game since the Ice Bowl and all that, but, you know, listen, you go up to Lambeau Field, that's a different beast. That's like coming to Century. I think that's why the home field advantage is so big. You know, certain places, it means something. I think it means something for the top four seeds, to be honest with you, whether Denver, New England in the AFC, Seattle and Green Bay in the NFC, home field advantage means something. And those four teams, whoever ends up playing the AFC and NFC championships at home, I think they're going to win. I just don't think Dallas is going to be able to go up there and win at Lambeau Field. And I could be wrong. You're right. There seems to be a destiny factor on the side of Dallas, but that's a whole different world going up there.
Now, Ian, with the Seattle offense, it's been a bit of a struggle at times here in the 2014 season, but you're seeing some bright spots with the young rookies at receiver, Paul Richardson and Kevin Norwood. How much of a help is that for Russell Wilson that they're able to come on at the end of the year?
Well, it's been huge. I mean, Russell Wilson, you know, when the first time these two teams met, it's interesting, the final drive, the game-winning drive, when Wilson hit Wilson, Luke caught the touchdown pass from Russell. On that drive, we saw kind of the first emergence of Kevin Norwood and Paul Richardson. They both made big catches on that drive, that game-winning touchdown drive. And then they really kind of disappeared again. That was back October 26th. They disappeared again for the next 2 weeks. But the last month, Paul Richardson specifically has really stepped forward. I want to say 12 catches the last three games, roughly. Does that sound right? I mean, off the top of my head, I think it's 12. And Kevin Norwood just seems to make big catches. If Kevin Norwood makes a catch, it's for a first down. And everybody here has been clamoring for that for a while. Let's see more of these guys. But I think if you have those two weapons, that changes everything. And look, again, let's go back. They beat Carolina 13-9 on October 26th. Seattle was 3-3 going into that game. Carolina was 3-3-1. How different are these two teams, though? Carolina's offensive line was beat up, but they still survived. But Seattle played that game without Bobby Wagner and without Byron Maxwell and without Max Unger. And Jordan Hill, who's been spectacular as well, lately, he didn't play in that game. So, you know, it's a different Seattle team that's going to take these guys on this week. I think that's why I'm pretty confident Seattle should be able to come away with a win.
Now, how great is it going to be to watch two of the better, if not best, middle linebackers in all the NFL with Luke Kuechly of the Panthers and, of course, Seattle's Bobby Wagner?
Well, I think that's a storyline that needs to be talked about more. I mean, just from a football standpoint. You have... I don't even think there's an argument. If you're looking at just a 4-3 defense and the middle linebacker in the 4-3, these are the two best guys. These are the guys with the gold standard. They're both not just Pro Bowlers, they're both All-Pro, first team. And Wagner made it missing five games this year. That speaks volumes to where he's at. Luke Kuechly, I always want to dismiss him. I look at him, I'm like, come on, man, how good can he be? I think he gets a lot of tackles because his defense is on the field more. Or the offense isn't as good. You know what? I'm wrong. He's good. He's spectacular. These two guys just are difference makers in a football game. I think the difference is Seattle. You know, you think about it, Wagner was out for those games and Seattle was still okay. They were 3-2 in the games that he missed. I'm not sure if Carolina could survive Luke Kuechly being out. And then their other linebacker, Davis, is sensational too. So, I mean, these are two really good football teams on the defensive side. I think the edge comes and Seattle's better in the secondary. Of course, Seattle's better than every other secondary in the NFL, but they're markedly better in the secondary. The front sevens probably cancel each other out.
Ian Furness, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And of course, Ian, there are some other games going on. Wild Card Weekend behind us and now, or almost behind us. And then there are some games coming up on the AFC side, Baltimore versus New England. Kind of want to get your thoughts here on some of these games that are coming up. What's your take on Baltimore versus New England?
I think the rabbit is going to run out with Baltimore. New England's New England. It's January. They're playing in Foxborough. It's Belichick. It's Brady. It's Gronk. It's an underrated defense. Flacco's been really good. I think Flacco's now 4-0 in wild card games. This isn't a wild card game, buddy. This is a different deal. You know, you're going to go up there. I think it runs out. I don't see any, you know, Justin Forsett's been a great story this year. You saw him put the ball on the ground last week. They survived and got away with that. At some point, they're going to realize that Justin Forsett runs a 4.940, and it's over. You know, I mean, Baltimore, give them all the credit in the world. They're a team in transition, you know, the last couple of years since winning the Super Bowl, and for them to get this far is a tribute to Harbaugh, a tribute to Flacco, and really that football team as a whole. But I don't see any way that New England loses that game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think Flacco has definitely earned every penny of his huge contract that he signed last year. And, you know, to get the team to where they are right now, that speaks volumes again with John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco. Kind of going with you, I believe New England's going to just, you know, take care of business and it's a foregone conclusion. Now, there's another game in the AFC, the Indianapolis Colts versus the Denver Broncos. Now, are we looking at the same Denver Broncos team as last year? Are they gonna show up?
I think you're talking about a team that's better, you know, than they were a year ago. You know, I think it took them a while to find their way. But, you know, at least on the defensive side, on paper, they're a better football team. They should be. And, man, I think this is sacrilege to say this, fellas. I think that as a football team, they're better. They found a running back in Anderson, obviously. They still have Thomas Squared catching the football. I think the interesting dynamic with Denver is Manning and Welker aren't what they used to be, you know, and that changes a little bit with who they are. But defensively, they're better. And they still have some offensive weapons. You know, again, home field advantage probably makes a big difference in this game. And you know, Denver playing up there is difficult and challenging to do. I don't know what the weather's going to be like, but there's going to be an upset somewhere along the way. I can't pick it. I can't see it. I can't see the home teams losing this weekend.
All right, Ian, we're down to it. The Seattle-Carolina game sounds like you are leaning towards the Seahawks and a victory there.
Yeah, I think, look, they won 13-9 without some key guys, and that was on the road. And Seattle was in the midst of just the epic meltdown that they had in that early part of the season with the Harvin situation and everything else. I think they go back. I think they go to CenturyLink Field, and I think they win. I think it'll be tough early, but I think they'll pull away in the second half.
And that would lead to an NFC Championship game in Seattle, and it sounds like you're taking the Packers at Lambeau Field.
You know what? You might as well just go ahead and cap off the way they started the season, right? Thursday night football with Seattle and Green Bay. Let's finish off the NFC slate with those two teams again.
No doubt.
Well, that would be an epic NFC championship, to say the least. Ian Furness, host of the Furness Show, 12-3 on 950 KJR in Seattle. And you can also see Ian on Seahawks Game Day Q13 Fox as a reporter on all things Seahawks. Ian, thanks so much for your time.
Anytime, fellas. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Ian.
Take care, guys.
There goes Ian Furness giving us the lowdown on everything Seahawks, Panthers, and the rest of the divisional round in the NFL.
Man, you know, Ian, every time he comes on, he gives, you know, precise factual information. And, you know, he has a bead on what's going on. I beg to differ a little bit, Sean Wally, on the conference divisional championship between Dallas and Green Bay. Again, and we'll see this weekend, but you know, there are those teams that everything just kind of rolls their way, no matter what happens, no matter if it's a huge play or an officiating call, or, you know, the wind blows the ball into the right direction through the uprights for the place kicker. I mean, it just seems like Dallas is that team right now for me. Not saying that they're a favorite, my favorite team. I'm just picking them because it just seems like everything's rolling right for them.
Well, the Cowboys have one thing going for them. They're undefeated on the road this year. So being on the road should not scare them in any way. Now, the cold might in Green Bay. It's not quite cold enough to be down where it was for the original Ice Bowl, but pretty darn close this coming weekend in Packerland. And those two teams, the Packers, the Cowboys, you know, it's going to come down to which defense can show up and make a play. And neither defense is great by any means. So whichever team can have success on third down and possibly get a turnover will probably win that game.
Yeah, you know, what goes in Seattle's favor is home field advantage. I mean, let's face it, you know, Ian was mentioning that point as well. It helps to have home field advantage, and it helps, you know, to have the teams coming into your place having to travel. And, you know, if Dallas winds up winning at Green Bay, or if Green Bay wins, then they have to travel to Seattle. But I think it's more of a daunting task for Dallas if they, you know, going from Dallas to Green Bay, then to Seattle. A little more mileage through the playoffs, and I think that would bode well for Seattle. But right now I'm just seeing, you know, a very sound football team in the Dallas Cowboys. They have a strong running game. They have, you know, a decent or above average pass attack. You have one of the better quarterbacks in the league with some gifted receivers, and then you have a touted offensive line that not too many people talk about. That offensive line has kept Tony Romo, you know, pretty safe this year. Every now and again, they'll go through a lapse, but for the most part, when he needs time to throw, he gets time.
Yeah, and there's talk that after the win yesterday against the Lions that Romo kind of exercised some demons and didn't throw that key interception and got his team over the hump and a victory in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a team effort. They didn't turn the ball over at all, you know, and that's what it takes, you know, to actually take care of the football and, you know, good things are going to happen, you know, and so, yeah, I look forward to what's going down with, you know, with the NFC, because I believe that a Dallas-Seattle NFC championship game is inevitable, man. It's going to happen. I'm more curious to see what's going to happen in the AFC. You know, and I told you who I picked, and, you know, I believe that the Broncos are actually going to right this ship and, you know, get it done this year. So, you know, just one of those things in the AFC. So, you know, Baltimore, we've already checked them off. The Indianapolis Colts, you know, they're still a team that's in progress and is going to learn here. So just leaves the Broncos.
I'm intrigued to see how the Baltimore-New England game turns out, because Baltimore is playing good football. They've got great players on both sides of the ball. And, yes, they're having to go to Tom Brady world, go to Foxborough. But guess what? They've done that very well in the playoffs lately. They're 2-1 the last three times they've played the Patriots in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Baltimore has had the New England Patriots number when it comes to that. And you're talking about in 2013, Baltimore beating New England 28-13, and that was in Foxborough. And that was, you know, that year was a great year for Baltimore because they went on to win the Super Bowl. But you know, I just feel that the New England Patriots are, you know, going to make sure that doesn't happen again.
All right, Sean. So does Seattle move on Saturday night, or does Carolina somehow find a way to get the upset?
Well, the way things have been going, and I mean, you know, Ian has, you know, mentioned this, and, you know, we've talked on how Carolina has played the Seahawks so tough as of recent. The last three times that they played, I believe Ian said 13-9, 12-7, 16-12. But the last time in Seattle, and that was, I know that goes all the way back to 2010, but my goodness, 31-14. I think that Seattle plays a lot better at home, and you can expect Seattle to take care of home field, especially in their first outing out. I see the Seahawks possibly winning this one, maybe 21-10.
I like it. I'll take it. That works for me and all of the 12th man faithful out there. You know, it's going to be a ridiculous atmosphere because think about it. It's a Saturday night game. People that work Monday through Friday don't have to go to work on Sunday. And even if you have a retail job or some form of medical job where you have to work on Sunday, you might be calling in. You might be making arrangements to switch schedules because you're given the 12th man all day to drink the Kool-Aid, to get hyped, and you don't start the game until 5:15 Pacific. That crowd is going to be ape nuts crazy.
Yeah, and we both know that place gets rocking. And, you know, every time I get the chance to be at CenturyLink, it never disappoints as far as the noise level, as far as the fan enthusiasm, and actually the play of the Seattle Seahawks. So I don't see it any different. I think Carolina comes in, like Ian said, they're going to have a valiant effort in the first half. It's going to look like they're in the ball game. And then the next thing you know, sometime late in the third, the game's going to open up, and that will end it for Carolina's hopes.
Well, Cam Newton has never had success against the Seahawks, and these games have all been in Carolina. So if you can't do anything well on your own field, you're not going to be able to come into Seattle which is happens to be your very first game in Seattle, your first experience, your first taste of the crowd noise. Who knows what the weather's going to be like? It's been raining so much. I think Noah's building an ark again up there. Wow, you know, Cam Newton's in for a rude awakening.
Well, yeah, you bring out a pretty good point as far as, you know, what is Carolina good at? I mean, are they a defensive team? Are they an offensive team? I mean, are they a running team, passing team? What are they good at? I mean, I think that they're a well-balanced team, you know, as far as the both sides of the football, but what do they excel at? And if you're going to be a team that moves on through the rounds and makes it as far as the NFC Championship and possibly the Super Bowl, you're going to have to be great at something. And right now I don't see Carolina being great at anything.
Well, I think they would say that they're a good running team. They are one of the top, I believe, five, top seven teams in the league overall in rushing. But, of course, a lot of that is also Cam Newton. And then their front seven on defense is definitely top 10 when you add in their D-line and then, of course, their nice core of linebackers.
Yeah, they do. They have a very strong group of linebackers. And again, yeah, you mentioned the running game. They have a solid running game. Of course, Jonathan Stewart showed flashes of Jonathan Snoop of old and had a very great game, a very good game.
Timberline High School's own.
That's right, Timberline High School. And, man, I just don't see them going up and doing anything great in that hostile environment of the 12s.
And Sean, I had to receive a phone call from one of our colleagues there at Fox Sports, one that you know well, working a lot, is Tyler Dare gave me a call, asked me to work on Saturday at the football game in Seattle, and of course I had to turn him down.
Wow, was I just getting ready to say it? I am going to say turn down for what? Oh, my goodness. And what are you turning him down for? What are you going to be doing this weekend? I mean, I know that you're doing some things with the Harlem Globetrotters, but I think that the position has changed a little bit.
Yes, things are a little different than they were a week ago for our last show. I was asked to take the reins of the beloved.
Hold on. Yes. The listeners have to brace themselves for this. I want to make sure that all of our listeners are sitting down. If you have any sharp objects or anything around right now, I want you to put them down, turn off those appliances or whatever, and I want you to pay attention to what Mr. Wally is getting ready to tell you. Go ahead, buddy.
I have assumed command of the Washington Generals and am their new coach. And we take on the Harlem Globetrotters.
Wait a minute. When you say new coach, are you the scout? Are you the assistant coach? I mean, what coach are we talking about?
The head coach, the only coach on the bench.
That's my guy right there. You have heard it here on the double with the Double S Express, the head coach. So how many games have you coached so far?
Oh, wow. You want me to count? I wasn't prepared for that one. let's see here.
Well, the head coach of the Washington Generals, my broadcast and co-host partner here, Sean Wally, head coach of the Washington Generals, who plays against the Harlem Globetrotters. That is some awesome stuff. And I know that he's back east, and of course it's 3 hours difference. So I know he's going to be preparing to beat these Harlem Globetrotters coming up. And so if you ever get the chance, if the Harlem Globetrotters are coming to your town, which I believe that they will be, make sure that you put it on your calendar to get a chance to see some exciting, fun basketball for families of all ages. And so I'm so proud of Sean Wally and the things that he is doing. He is now the head coach of the Washington Generals. Go figure. That's my guy. Show number 88 is almost in the books here. Guest number one, we had Ed Haskins, the head basketball coach of the Garfield High School Bulldogs in Seattle. Got a chance to talk with Ed about a lot of things and missed, you know, some things. So I look forward to having Ed on again so we can talk about some of his players, some of the other things that are going on with him. And, of course, guest number two, Ian Furness of 950 KJR in Seattle, and, of course, the Seahawks insider for Q13 Fox in Seattle as well. Talked a little bit of the NFC and the AFC and his outlook on what's going to happen throughout the playoffs, and didn't really quite get into the Super Bowl prediction, but I know that he's probably leaning towards the Seattle Seahawks. The 12s know that he's going to be pulling for the Seahawks as well. Show number 88 is in the books. It's been a great show. Look forward to, if you want to catch any of our shows in the archives, you can go to www.double-s-express.com. Didn't open up the phone lines today, but that doesn't mean that we won't open them up in the future. You can also download the app to listen to our show live at BBS Radio. So download that app and click on Station 2. Show is on at 7 p.m. Mondays, once a week every Monday. And just had a great time. And so that's show number 88 in the books. For Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd, Don Newsom, the engineer. We'll talk to you next week on The Double.
Thanks for listening to On The Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On The Double with the Double S Express.